we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of a Purely Arsenal podcast. It's a Merry Christmas. Since November the 1st, we haven't had a win nil. And we saved it for the big Boxing Day. We haven't lost on Boxing Day since 1987 at home. That's the year of my birth. And we weren't going to do it this time, were we, Neil? Fantastic win. Nice to have you. How are you doing?
Of course not. We want to beat Man United's record. I think they've got it, done it 12 times. We've done it 10 games or something. So... yeah, see, I might be some stats, LL. A few stats.
A few of those, from what I remember growing up, used to always go to Arsenal on Boxing Day. It was a big thing that I used to always do. And yeah, a lot of those games were against Chelsea, which is strange. Like, we always played them at home around Christmas time. There was a Theo Walcott one where we won 3-1, and we had a few where and we'd always do them actually at home. So maybe it was a good omen, not one that we thought about on the last podcast, that's for sure. But also got James Johnson going.
We just beat the big teams now, don't we? Man United last win, Chelsea this week.
Yeah.
What's this thing about we never beat the big teams? Of course we do, all the time.
Yeah, which might make us a little bit more frustrated, but we're getting to that. It's a very positive podcast today. James, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. No, was it Boxing Day the one where Henry like fell into the ball and fell into the net against Cudicini, and he sort of done a celebration?
Maybe.
Was that against Chelsea, was it?
Yeah, I remember.
I thought that was a game that we battered someone.
Because I remember being
there. I can't remember that being against Chelsea.
I remember being there and just laughing my head off like that. He's one of the most funniest goals I've ever seen, because he sort of like was pushed over.
Yeah, he fell into it.
We had a few around. I mean, I remember Will Todd scoring a couple against Chelsea, and I was there. I remember just calling Fat Frank all sorts of names, obviously nice ones. I never thought about it, and then watching this game and I was thinking, you know some of those own maybe are ringing true again, because we even on this podcast, you know, we didn't give ourselves much of a chance, did we? Let's
be honest. I predicted a win, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you did.
Did
it win?
Was it
2-1? Was it or something?
Yeah.
No, you were close then. You were pretty close. Sorry,
I should have better than I expected.
I should recall the predictions more. Neil predicted a draw, I think, and I predicted I predicted a loss. But let's get into it. And I don't want to start with the lineup yet. Neil, it's just November 1st. 6 weeks we've had of absolute dross, and it's not been just bad results, it's been terrible performances, and we said that we had to see something from the manager and from the players, because we felt something would have had to change, you know. And we certainly criticised the manager, and it's certainly on the last podcast, but we all want it to turn around, and we're certainly not there yet. But Neil, it was a fantastic I think it was our best game of the season. Neil, what were your thoughts?
Oh gosh, without a doubt it was the best game of the season. And look, making those changes and being bold and choosing some of the youngsters to play. I was saying, why doesn't he try and emulate what he does in the Europa League? And he kind of did a bit of that. And look what happened. The transformation. It was like watching a different team. In fact, I was watching the game and I was looking at Chelsea and thinking, that's what we've been like, the way Chelsea were. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination taking anything away from how our performance, but it was almost like the way they were set up and the way they were playing, it kind of reminded me of how we've been over the last few weeks. And in injecting those youngsters just completely changed our dynamic from one extreme to the other. We had press, we had aggression, we had directness, we had amazing off-the-ball movement, we were fluid. And we were just so much more confident. I mean, right from the off, you saw Bellerin going down the wing and you know, almost Martinelli scoring straight away. And that dictated our outline for the whole game and how we were going to set up and how we played right from the start. And it was amazing to see. And you see, this is the thing. So we, on this podcast, we've never said that we want to win every game. We don't want to win trophies every, well, it would be nice to, but you know, we've got to be realistic. We just want to see a good performance, and we got it in abundance. I thought Emil Smith Rowe was fantastic. Martinelli, Saka, man of the match again, you know, and even, you know, he changed Mari. I mean, I am so glad Willian wasn't picked. I know I always say that anyone who wears the badge, you support them, you get behind them, but he's been so goddamn awful lately. I'm so glad he wasn't picked. You know, obviously it was an illness that ruled him out, but I'm just so happy that he wasn't there, and it gave someone else a chance to shine. And there was an unsung hero in the team as well. You had Lacazette, who, you know, has been getting a lot of pelters, but these youngsters brought something else out in him, and he was great. He was probably just as good as them, but he just wasn't. Obviously the youngsters are going to get all the accolades, but he was just as good for me. I thought it was a great team performance. You know, even Leno, we saved a pen, guys. I mean, come on. Good, it was just everything about it. It was a good save, you know, and even the pen that we took from Lacazette was a good pen. Apparently he's the top scorer for opening goals in the Premiership. Did you know that? He scored four opening goals. Yeah, and he's in the Prem. So, you know, that's one record we can be all happy about.
And also, he's the top scorer for the club now. So you can...
Yes.
You've derailed the Eddie Nketiah hype train. Well done.
My brother said that. It's weird. My brother said that before the season started. He went, watch Lacazette be the top goal scorer this season. I said, let's see what happens. But I don't want to cut off your point, Neil. Go and finish your point.
Yeah, just throughout the whole pitch, you know, the movement, it was very fluid for me, and it seemed like everyone knew their roles. Everyone was fighting harder. I mean, it was just a complete opposite of what we've seen. Everyone was driving forward. I mean, Xhaka, I mean, was that the same bloke? Has he cloned himself, and is that a new Xhaka or something? Because, I mean, you know, is it a superhero version of him that's come out? He's donned a superhero outfit and he's playing a different game. I mean, it was amazing. I think he was involved in two of the goals, if I'm not mistaken. Just very, very different, and that's what we want to see. We just want to see this more front foot in this forward high press. Get at the opposition as best you can. Don't sit back. Don't hold back. And I think Arteta gave Tierney and Bellerin more freedom as well to express themselves. I just thought it was an amazing performance from the boys. And for me, I've always said it's like tennis. One good win doesn't mean that's it. We're going to be back now. We're going to be like flying throughout the whole of the season. We have to continue this momentum on into the next few games. And the next few games for us are absolutely crucial. You know, in tennis, if you break serve, it's only valid if you hold that serve. Arsenal now have to hold serve, and we have to make sure that we continue this form and momentum into the next few games.
Yeah, I agree. I was really impressed by the performance. And I thought there was two options for this game, negatively, pessimistically, like I am. I thought we could sneak it, luckily, because the performances just weren't... There was no indication this performance was coming around the corner, do you know what I mean? And we'd lose it handsomely and be back kind of where we've been talking for the last sort of 6-7 weeks. But we won. But more importantly, like you said, we deserve to win the game, no question. In fact, I think the scoreline flattered Chelsea, if anything. I just want to go back to the lineup a little bit, James, because credit to Arteta, by the way, and we all want Arteta to turn it around. Although I believe going into this game, you know, if I'm honest truth, I felt maybe he's a little bit lucky to still be in the job. But at the same time, you know, no, you're watching this game, you hear about this talk about, you know, fans wanting, you know, loss and things like that. I mean, don't want to go into the stupidity of that, but just you never want that. Obviously, you always want to win the game, no matter who's in charge, no matter what's going on. And we want Arteta to turn it round. And this was a really, really good sign, the performance. But just to go back to the lineup, is the biggest question on the lineup, James? Not that we saw a lineup that was really just jumped off the page at you, full of youth and energy. I think for years we've said, talked about the best youngsters in the squad and spoke about the likes of probably Smith Rowe and Martinelli and Saka being the three biggest. Certainly Smith Rowe we spoke about for a couple of years on this podcast. Martinelli we all know about, and Saka just ever since sort of Emery's era, he's just been unstoppable. But is the biggest question the fact that Willian and Luis and Gabriel were forced out because of COVID contact, and Willian and Luis because of
illness. I don't want to necessarily speculate on what that reason is, because it would literally be at this point speculation, though this does seem a little coincidental, but I'll leave the conspiracies there for now. But is the biggest question, James, I'll get to it in a second, is the biggest question whether these changes were forced or not? Is that really the biggest question? Because he still deserves credit, Arteta, but would he have done it in the same situation if everyone was fit?
Yeah, see, that is the massive, massive question. And like you said, yeah, there's no, you know, you don't want to speculate on the rumours and the tattle. But I'm like, if the rumours and the tattle are to be believed, then for me, those two players need to either have their contracts terminated immediately or be put on the transfer list straight away in January, because that's completely and wholly unacceptable if that rumour is correct, which so far, there's been nothing in any of the papers to indicate it. I thought it would at least be not even a back page. I thought it'd be a front pager if it was correct. So the fact that nothing's come out, I'm sort of like, well, then that is just a naughty, you know, little rumour that's been spread around and everything else. But yeah, I mean, we all said it, didn't we, that he just needs to strip it back to basics and just play fast, free-flowing, attacking football and give this youth a go. And even if it was forced, or maybe he wanted to do that, he got it spot on. I mean, Neil, you summed it up right. It seemed as though it was like, and it's harsh to say after we win, but it was like Lampard was the Arteta this week. And then Arteta got everything correct, because Lampard's substitutions, Lampard's tactics were absolutely dreadful. It was on over Christmas, and I watched it because I haven't seen it for years. It was like Space Jam. It was like someone had taken the powers away from these players and given new life into our ones. I mean, obviously, Aubameyang, still, you know, he was dropped, he was on the bench, and there were still question marks over his fitness. And I watched it on Boxing Day with my father, and my father turned to me and said, James, I think we play better without him, because the others can express it. It all goes through him when he plays. But he said, these lot are like, yeah, go and express yourself a bit more and everything else. And I was just like, Dad, I'm like, I don't want to get rid of him or sell him, but I'm like, you could be onto something there, because everybody else seemed to raise just a level through the energy of literally Saka, Martinelli and Smith Rowe. And you talk about Martinelli, like you said as well, I think it was 46 seconds in. And it was a scuffed sort of shot and everything else, but I'm like, 46 seconds in, if we went 1-0 up then, it could have been absolute curtains for Chelsea. It could have been absolute. And we've said for ages, cool, wouldn't it be nice just to bash somebody? We could have had that. If that went in, I think they would have gone completely down the pan, because it just instantaneously, the energy level was absolutely immense. And I mean, you keep talking about it after that 46 seconds. Tierney was just running up and down with Martin. He was pumping in crosses. And you were like, oh, something's going to happen. You had Emil Smith-Rowe spinning, you know, Conte like a hot point washer. And people still to this day say that Conte is the best defensive midfielder in the Prem. I would say he was on current form. I think that Ndidi at Leicester is. I think he's different gravy, that Ndidi at Leicester currently. But there's no denying that N'Golo Kante is a talented player. But Smith-Rowe just had him the whole game. And do you know what, Neil, you've been calling out for him to play for about 3-4 years, haven't you, for Smith Rowe? And he finally comes in and people are like, oh, he fluked it. It was a lucky performance. I'm like, that's no fluke. I'm like, this guy is just a masterful player.
And just to not to interrupt you, but just obviously it was Ralph Rangnick, who everyone's talking about at the moment, right? The guy that we want to bring in as the director of football above Edu's head, that brought Emil Smith-Rowe to Leipzig. And what he said when he brought him there, the direct quote is, he was 18, exceptionally gifted player, right? And we saw him score in the League Cup against Blackpool, I think it was 2 years ago, and he scored in the Europa League 2 years ago. And we were watching it going, this player is going to make it. He's going to make it at Arsenal. And injuries have cost him. Also, the way we've used him have cost him. But here's the thing with it, and this is where I do sort of hit to Arteta a little bit. If you don't have that player, because it was so obvious that when we started watching this game that not only do we have a number 10 plan, but we have a number 10 plan that knows exactly how to fill that role. His body position, the way he receives the ball, the pockets of space he starts to pick up in, right? So if he doesn't have that, then don't do it, right? And the frustration was that he's been doing it with players like Willock, and it's not an effect. It's not Willock can't play that way. He's not in that role. I don't necessarily know what Willock's best position is, but at the same time, he can't play that way. And dropping Lacazette in deep, right? You should always look at your team and get the best out of what you've got, not just try to mould them into what you think you need to do, right? So that was the frustration. And this is why it was almost like, well, if Smith Rowe truly wasn't ready until today or yesterday or whatever, then don't do it until then. And that's the real frustration, right? Because you didn't do it towards the latter end of last season. You were willing to go that far. So don't move off that. And that's where I think he got it wrong. But sorry to interrupt, but I thought I'd look into what Ralph Rangnick said, because I was really curious and desperate to have him back as well. He was injured when he bought him or loaned him. Desperate to have him back. This guy's, I mean, he's a real talent, Smith Rowe, isn't he?
Yeah. And I mean, you sum it up best there. That Red Bull Leipzig, their recruitment policy, I mean, most of the Red Bull clubs, even New York Red Bulls to an extent, even though they've not really won anything or done anything.
And Salzburg is another one, I think. Salzburg,
all of them are just, their recruitment all the way round is superb. And I mean, they seem to just dash players between the three all together and share them around. I mean, there was a kid called Tyler Adams, who's a young defensive midfielder from America that was at New York Red Bulls, did really well, and he's at Leipzig now, and he's really progressing. I think he's early 20s. He's a really, really, he's going to be a fantastic player when he finally properly comes through. They don't buy or loan or whatever duds over there. They really, and when they sell, they completely reinvest that money and do really well with it. So, yeah, I've got a problem there as well. But you looked at it as well, the midfield pivot. You thought, oh God, that's a bit slow. You know, Elneny and Xhaka, that's not the best two. And then when Holding and Mari behind them, I was even like, ooh, that's even dangerous. But I got to give big props to Mari. I know you said the booking was silly on a Kovacic. I thought it was really clever, because Manchester City do this a lot, where they're like, look, if they're coming at you on the counter, just make the foul. Just make the foul, stop it, get the reset. And you know what? I don't think if that's another centre back that we have at the club, they make that. I don't think they do it. Because it was high up. He was before the halfway line. And I think the others would have just let him carry on running. But Mari went, no, do you know what? I'm just going to give him a little, you know, kick in the ribs or whatever, you know, a little elbow in the ribs or whatever. Just stop it and get the reset. And then he had a brilliant tackle on Tammy Abraham just before the penalty. He did a really, and he sort of went to him, get up, you're diving, you know, whatever. Called him a few names. And then Holding did really, I thought Holding had a brilliant game as well, even with his passing, and people criticised him playing,
especially second half.
Yeah.
Well, the goal was really, the third, really good. We'll get to it, but the third goal was really from his pass to Xhaka, which was really, really key. But I don't want to cut you off. But
he had a brilliant tackle on Werner where he just showed him down the line and just went boom and took the corner. So I got to give them props as well. And I thought Bellerin, who a lot of people were like, he's lucky to get back in here, me included. I thought, ooh, I picked him in my lineup that I do, because I was like, he's always going to pick him. But I thought, man, you never know, Ainsley might get. But yeah, and he put the armband on him as well. Another big call. A lot of people were like, ooh, maybe Lacazette should have had the armband on. But no, he gave it to Bellerin. And for me, I thought he had a really, really good game as well. And apart from the awful pass that he played to Smith, I don't know how you make the ball bounce from a 10-yard pass. He'll have to, maybe if he wants to come on here and defend that himself, he'll have to explain it to me how he done it, because I don't know. But that was another one that we should have, you know, if the pass was better, I think Smith Rowe would have scored that and we'd have been 1-0 up earlier than we were.
Yeah, it's kind of where he kind of missed the ball, but
but it's a great chance if he could have got his foot on it, wasn't he? Because he was about six or 10 yards out, wasn't he? But Bellerin and Bari, I'll come back to. I had a little bit of issues with their... Well, Bellerin's passing in the first half, a little bit of issues with it, but I'd always start him against Chelsea, so I agree with you there, because he's got history. Ever since he got knocked out against Chelsea, he's been a different player against Chelsea, we know that, so you always start him against Chelsea. Now, I do think it was a little harsh, maybe a little harsh on Niles, who in our last two really bad performances has stood out a little bit as being one of the ones that's sort of a fighter and going for it. I felt a little bit harsh on him, but okay. What I found really interesting, Neil, was let's just talk about like the game a little bit and get to the first goal when you're ready to. But we started so front-footed, which we're so used to starting so lackadaisical and slow, and you know, and not moving, especially from home. Right, we're trying to take the game to the other team. But why was that? Why did we started? What I noticed in this game was it was almost like they listened to some of the good parts of Arteta. Right? Did you notice how much we played out of the back, Neil? Did you know? Which we've stopped doing for weeks, by the way. We were playing out the back, even under real pressure, playing out the back. We was pressing high, and I think Martinelli was the trigger there. Neil, maybe you think that's something different. But what my question really is, why was it so effective? Why this change? Was it just simply putting in these players, or was it the fact that maybe some of these players are buying in a little bit more to some of the beliefs that Arteta's trying to push to them? Some of the senior players maybe aren't.
I think it's a combination. I think firstly, the youth of the selection he made with the younger players has just given them almost like a fresh base to start with, you know, clean slate. They gave that exuberance and energy that we needed so desperately, and that I think is infectious, because it's almost as if the senior players that remained in the team against Chelsea, it's like, wow, these players are going to add something different. We've got to step up. Because if we don't, it's going to really highlight our fallacy or recent fallacies within the game and how we've been playing. So it's, I think it's a combination of that. I think also Arteta did give the players more freedom. None of us are privy to what he said, but it looked, when you watch it, as I said, mentioned earlier, especially with Bellerin and Tierney, just giving them that more freedom. So it's almost like they've taken on board what he's allowed them to do and maybe said to them. It's a combination of the youth and the younger players being fresh. I mean, Martinelli, he does that all the time. You know, ever since I've seen him play, he does that all the time. So that's got to breed some infection across the board. When he's playing like that, you know, the other players have got to step up. And I also think it's a combination of having those players, the Willians, out of the team. And maybe if there is a problem, I don't know if there is, you know, I'm not suggesting for a minute there is, but if there is a fallout between the Willians and Luiz and the manager and with other players, if they're not there, then you've eradicated that problem, albeit whether it be by illness or something else, which is a bit more sinister maybe. But the point is they were not there. James, you've quite rightly suggested that Leno and Luiz have got an issue, possibly. So you've taken him out of the equation. He's not there. So you've got a more. I think if that's the case, again, I'm not saying this is the answer, but if that's the case, you've got a team which maybe want to play for each other. There's no one that's in there that's going to cause or issue any toxicity into the first 11. So they want to play for each other. You've got a mixture of exuberance and youth and energy. You've got a bit more that youth, certainly for the younger players, they probably want to play for the badge. They want to play for the club. They've got that self-respect and pride. And that is what I saw emulated on the pitch. It's almost as if they all wanted to play for us. So you look at Smith Rowe, it was in the first half and he fell on the floor and he was still fighting for the ball. You know, you've got things like that, which showpiece and epitomise exactly the character that we saw in that game. So I think it's a combination, Jack, and full marks to Arteta. I think he got it spot on. I mean, we've been waiting so long for this. Like you said, a lot of our attacks were from the back. I think everyone felt more comfortable again playing that way, and I just felt that it just worked. Everything he did worked. It may have been also helped and aided by the fact that Lampard's tactics were completely in disarray. And as I said, and as you both have said, almost like watching how we played over the last few weeks, it was just weird. It was like a mirror. It's like we'd gone in some mirror universe and watching it all unfold. But I just think it was a combination of many things. And I don't know if you want to go on to the first goal. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Sorry, I muted myself. What were your thoughts on it? Was it a pen? It was a great ball by Xhaka, from what I remember. Tierney had James on toast, I felt, really. Defensively, James.
No, he was... Sorry, am I going to talk about James's?
No, go ahead, Neil.
Okay. Yeah, no, Xhaka, we touched on him right at the start. Different player. You know, looking forward, looking to create. That's a big word we didn't maybe not mention so far. Creativity was there. We finally have creativity again.
Seven shots on target, yeah. But the most since Norwich under Arteta. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's quite significant.
Well, it's massively significant. I mean, Chelsea only had three. So, you know, we doubled, more than double what they had.
And their first was in the 83rd. Their first was their goal.
Precisely. And, you know, you, Xhaka, again, I thought was a different person. And that was a great ball to Tierney. It was a great ball to Tierney. And Tierney, whatever, you know, he completely made it. Was it James? He made him look stupid. Absolutely stupid. And I'm sorry, that was a penalty. We had a discussion a few pods ago, and you said it yourself, Jack. You said, unfortunately, these days, the way the rules are, even the slightest of touches, it's a pen. And that was a touch. I think his toe, his foot, they slight touch with their feet, and then you saw his knee touch the back of the leg.
So it's a penalty. But no commentator thought it was one, which was interesting.
No,
not one.
No. None of the comments. Well, I was watching it on Sky, and on Sky they were saying, that's not a penalty, never a penalty. But actually, when I watched it on Match of the Day, surprisingly, both Murphy and Shearer said it was, and I was shocked. I was like, expecting
you summed it up a minute ago. That movement by Kieran Tierney is elite. That is elite, because how many times have you seen Jamie Vardy and people go on about, oh, he's a little shit, Bruno Fernandes. That is what I call intelligent play to draw contact. As soon as he got his body across, Reece James was like, shit, I'm going to have to make the tackle. Because Neville, when I was listening to it back as well, because I watched it again, Neville even went, James, don't make that foul, don't make that. And it's a soft penalty, but nowadays it's a penalty made on. And the fact it took so long to give.
Oh, done.
It was like the Watford game, wasn't it? When was it Lacazette, and they took forever to do that? I was like, mate, come on. Like, I know you hate Arsenal, but you even a blind man can see they are penalties. I'm like, you are just deliberately mucking around now for the sake of it. But yeah, no, I'll let you carry on. I just wanted to say how.
James, you're absolutely right. It's like the team behind VAR want to make a name for themselves as well, don't they? Especially when it's Arsenal. Say, oh, we come and let's just draw it out. Let's just, you know, they probably knew right from the start off it was a pen. I mean, the referee gave it straight away. Didn't even hesitate.
But he had a great view of it, like better view than you probably see from cameras.
Yeah. So, all right, you know, people who come onto this podcast and maybe watch it or listen to it, they're going to think, oh, yeah, good, is it? Obviously, they're going to be biased. But no, look, we try and be fair. And we've even said when things have gone for us and they haven't been, we've made a comment about it. We've said, look, well, we've got lucky there. There was no luck this occasion. That is a penalty by the law. That is what it is. It's a penalty. And then talking about the penalty, I thought, like I said, yeah, it was a great pen. He sent the keeper the wrong way. Keeper was trying to do his motion on the line and try and put Lacazette off, and Lacazette didn't fall for it. And he stopped midway, didn't he? Hesitated, and then he blasted it the wrong way. So
did the old sort of step and stop, yeah. But just touching on Lacazette, we said a few weeks ago when we tried to play a number 10 in other players, Willock and stuff like that, and Lacazette was out of the team at that point. That he might be the player to benefit most from actually playing higher up, right? Because he's literally being asked to do two roles when he plays centrally. He's being asked to drop in and being asked to also be this sort of false nine position, right? And he didn't have to do that this time. All of his play was closer to the box. He did drop deep at times, but no way near as deep as we've been seeing him drop, right? And no way near as often, right? Still play with... But I just think, out of all the profile of players and what we know about this manager, he literally is the best we've got. And I also think you've got to think of a player who hasn't been offered a new contract, has 18 months left. I think he's going to be really key to what we do for the rest of the season, because I think there's a lot of motivation. We already know these senior players can, and Lacazette's not faultless, can drop off, right, and stop playing. But I think he's at a moment where he knows he's got one more big contract in him, probably. It might not be with us, it might be with someone else, but he knows the next 6 months are crucial, because in the summer it's either us or elsewhere, right? We're going to get rid of him if we don't sign him, and most likely we don't sign him. And I personally, I really like Lacazette. I'm absolutely fine with not signing him. In fact, I'd rather not reward him like we did, we have done with other players, Ozil, maybe Aubameyang, hopefully not, just because he's had a good 6 months. But I really think he has a real possibility to have a good 6 months. But I thought, I was watching this game, I just think, why is he playing so differently? I thought, one, Martinelli, like a young Alexis, like it's literally like, either you're with me or forget about it. And when someone gives that much energy to every aspect of their game, right, defensively, and he lost the ball a lot, Martinelli. He wasn't perfect, but he wins it back. He fights for it back. He keeps going. He keeps trying to create. He keeps fighting. He hates missing chances. He's absolutely devastated when he misses chances, where you're looking at it going, well, it's an overhead kick, mate. You know, like, if you miss that, you miss that. But you can see he's hitting the ground. And you just that mentality, right, of just wanting to achieve constantly. And you're looking at Lacazette, and he's literally going, well, I've got a standard here now. This is the standard, right? And I thought that was really key. But like you said, Neil, great put away of the penalty. And it was really important to get that first goal, right? I don't think we've been 1-0 up for some time either in a game.
First time since Watford that we were 2 up at half time.
First time.
That was
unbelievable.
Yeah.
See, I know James is going to answer the next question, but just very quickly, when you talk about Lacazette, for me, I looked at him and there was one clear cut difference in his body language. And for me, he was enjoying the game. And I've not seen that in many of our players for a long time. I thought he was really enjoying the game. And at the end, when he had that chance, when the goalkeeper made a mistake, did you see how upset he was when he missed that chance?
Neil should have chipped it.
The other thing is, he didn't have to do any running.
Yeah.
It was just literally like, you are the main man at the front, and we're going to give you it near the box, because in the box, he's still lethal. I still, to this day, think he's very, very good in the box.
Good finisher.
Yeah, and it's just like, you be up there and you do that. We're not going to, you don't need to run. You got Saka, who did, what was it, nearly 12K? I think he did 11.5K or something.
Most in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to talk about everyone in the front four, but Smith Rowe's filling the positions that Lacazette isn't, but he's filling them by facing goal. He's not facing backwards. He's filling them with his body position completely different to Lacazette, right? So Lacazette can just be 10 yards higher up the pitch.
Six ball recoveries from him as well, the most of any player.
Yeah. And I said this even when he was on a terrible run of form. Again, I think it was really bad management from Arteta to have 3 goals in 3 games from your number 9 striker. And then what do? 3 goals in 3, and you drop him. Yeah. I mean, there was no reason to drop him. It was one game. It was no reason to drop him. It didn't make any sense. It wasn't, you don't run, how much does Liverpool rotate their front? Just if they're playing and they're scoring, keep playing them, right? So, and I think he's been poor, like I said, and he needs to take some of the criticism, but that was just so silly, I thought. But for me, I would try to play him in that number 9 position as much as possible. And I don't really see anyone else that provide. I know, you know, but whatever our disagreements are on Eddie Nketiah, we can say he's different. He's really, really different. And I think Lacazette fits a certain type of game, to be honest. I don't think Eddie Nketiah has that kind of hold up play or anything like that. He runs off the ball more than being on it. And I just think it's different. So I think he needs to play a lot, which then brings us to the dilemma of Aubameyang, right? And the problem is we're so left side heavy. So Martinelli clearly is better on the left, right? And I'm sorry, if a player keeps playing like this, you can't drop him. Like, it doesn't matter who's on the bench. You just can't drop him. So, well, Neil, I'll go to you on it. I mean, I know he's our captain and then he's our top goal scorer, and I'm not saying this guy shouldn't be in our team. And of course, I think he's going to come back into the team. But the dilemma is where? Because we're right side weak, which I've always said provides an opportunity for Saka as well, because we've never really defined his position in the squad. And if we we also know about Saka is you can literally play him anywhere and it'll be effective. And if you know that nothing's worked out on the right, right, what's he done? He's tried Nelson, didn't work. He tried Pepe, didn't work for him, or maybe it did for us, but it didn't work for Arteta. He tried Willian, Lee said about that the better, right? He's tried so many things, so you know you'll get a performance out of Saka. Why? Because he gives you a performance no matter. You play him left back, he gives you a performance. So the question really is, you know, where does our captain fit? I know it's just one game, but where does our captain fit in to get the most out of him? If someone like Martinelli just literally continues to give this type of energy, and I do think it's just more about the energy, the absolute energy from the guy, Neil.
I'm sorry to say this, but you don't play him at the minute. That's very controversial because he's been off form. Quite rightly, he was put on the bench. I was so happy when I saw that. I know it sounds crazy. Look, I love Aubameyang when he's on fire, when he is, clicking. He can score amazing goals. Let's not beat around the bush. He won us the FA Cup, really, if you think about it, in both the semi-final and final. It was him. You can't... And he has scored some amazing goals. They're not crappy little tap-ins. He has made, created, him sometimes himself, and finished some great goals. And he is our... I don't agree with it. I think he should be stripped of the captaincy and let him focus on playing football and doing his job. But, you know, that's a different discussion. For me, we have not seen him do anything. I know a lot of people have been saying, and quite rightly so, that he's lacked service because of our lack of creativity. Yes, you can argue that. Of course you can. We've been devoid of creativity. We forgot what it meant this season. No idea. Apart from Europa League, no idea what creativity is. It was non-existent in our team. We were just playing side to side and backwards between the defenders. That was our game plan. But then you play this team against Chelsea, completely different, as we said. Transformation. It was almost like they've metamorphosed from a sluggish caterpillar into an amazing speed, you know, Usain Bolt butterfly. Completely different. And one of the key elements was Aubameyang wasn't there. So it's given the other guys, he's not the focal point. I remember, I used to like Alexis. I think Alexis was a graft, hard graft player. He was very good. And like you talked about Martinelli earlier, Jack, Alexis used to lose the ball a lot, but he used to work hard and he used to get it back. But I remember there was a point when we knew he was starting to become toxic for the club. And we knew that he was probably going to go somewhere else. And we kind of guessed it was going to be Man U. And do you remember leading up to that, our play suffered. And then as soon as he left, the play changed immediately because he wasn't the focal point anymore. And I think very much so Aubameyang has been recently. So taking him out of this game, I just thought everyone played with a lot more purpose and freedom because they didn't have to think, oh, we've got to give it to Aubameyang. We've got to play. He's got to be the... We have to build a team and build our set-up play whenever we do create, if it's very far and fleeting. But when we do, he's got to be the focal point. And even when he did get the ball, because we say lack of service and creativity, but even recently when he's got the lack of ball, because he's been devoid of such confidence, he always fluffed it up. He messed it up every single time. You know, he scored, what, two goals this season? Is that right? I might be wrong. But he scored two goals this season. It's that's ridiculous. All right, three goals. You know, Lacazette scored four, hasn't he?
He's played a lot less, I think, probably.
And he's played a lot less. You know, his turnaround, his return on investment in goals has been shocking. You don't play him because if you play him, you're going to have to sacrifice the setup that we had against Chelsea, and I don't think that's right. And for me, you don't bring back Willian, you don't bring back Luis, you don't bring, because the team that performed that day, what does it say to them? What does it say to the youngsters, for example, even the ones which didn't get into the team, the ones that are trying, the fringe players? What does it say? if, for example, it was because of an illness or whatever, and it was a forced hand that Arteta had to make these changes, these kids or these players play such a great game, brilliant together, and then all of a sudden, oh, sorry, lads, you're out because Willian and Luiz are back fit. You know, we have to, and Aubameyang's fine, you know, because he's our captain, he's our token player, we'll stick them back in. It's like, the kids are going to, all the people that are going to get sacrificed, they're going to think, what do we have to do? What do we have to do? We have done nothing wrong. We have played an absolutely blinder of a game, and then we're dropped again just because the players with the names on the back of their shirt are back. I'm sorry, guys, you should be awarded on merit. You should be awarded on merit only, right? If you play well, you're in that team. I don't care what your name is. I don't care how much you earn. You could be Ronaldo and Messi, and you could be Maradona and Pele. If you're not playing well, you do not play on the pitch. And that's
just to play devil's advocate. A little bit. Obviously, we do have to keep in mind, you know, the return from injury for Smith Rowe and the return from injury for Martinelli, and you have to balance that a little bit with, especially as we're playing so often over the Christmas break. Though I agree. I don't see how you can change the front four when you've seen how poor it's been.
Can I say on that, Jack? I know. Sorry, I'm interrupting. I'm just.
No. Go ahead.
You're right. But they're young players, Jack. They have the energy. They recover from injuries quicker. I think they could play every day if they wanted to. I really believe that. I know I'm going maybe a bit OTT here, but I don't think we should worry about that, because if you start thinking, oh, we've got to protect them, then you fall back into this mindset again that, oh, if they lose, just look. Let's put this just hypothetically. What if they're dropped and Willian comes back and he plays the game of his best game ever? Then everyone's going to say, oh, look, do you see what I mean? And then
that one's a big argument.
You know, and then it'll demotivate them again. We've got to play them in a very clever way. We've got to nurture them. Martinelli, Emil Smith Rowe, Saka. I mean, Saka plays anyway, so I'm not too worried about him. But Martinelli and Emil Smith Rowe are exceptional talents. We cannot afford to lose them. We have to hold on to them. We're most likely going to lose Balogun, which I'm fuming about. Right. We cannot afford to lose Emil Smith Rowe and Martinelli. We have to keep them. And by doing that, we have to give them their chance.
No, I agree with you. We also haven't seen Aubameyang centrally with a proper number 10 for some time. I just want to say that as well. So we don't know fully. It's probably a little bit unfair on him. And I do believe he is one you have to reintegrate at some point. I mean, he will have to do that. He needs that player on his side at this moment. He really does. However, if you do it in the next game, I think that's wrong. Go on, James.
Yeah, Jack, I just want to say, I think it was the last podcast, I'm trying to remember, you made a fantastic point where you were talking about some of the senior players potentially turning against the manager. And I think you said something about they believed in him last year because there was a trophy at the end. And it's like, oh, it's annoying, but we can see something. So, and now it's just like, oh, he's just annoying. He's just a piping all the time, you know, do this, do that. And they're like, I don't want to listen to you anymore. The removal of those two bad eggs, because I even though I might not believe that other rumour, I do believe them two went to Adu and were like, get rid of him, because they've done it before. They've got previous. They've done it to Conte. They did it to Jose.
Are you talking Willian and Luis, right?
Yeah, Willian and Luis.
We already know with Willian. He went off to Dubai, didn't he, sir?
Exactly. So he removed those two bad eggs. And do you know what? Every single... You said it as well, Neil, when you were talking... was it just a case of they were, you know, those players were taken out and we got a lift or whatever? Every single player that was picked for that team the other night were people that Mikel Arteta has believed in and turned around. Okay, Leno, for all that I still think he's shaky, he's like, you're my number one. So Leno plays for him. Bellerin plays for him because back when Bellerin was a kid, he lived with Arteta and Arteta's wife before he moved into another house.
He's also shown huge faith in him.
Yeah, and he's always believed in
injury
Bellerin.
And return.
He was going to loan. He went, no, do you know what? Yeah. I'm sticking with you. You're my man. Yeah. He's got a lift. He signed Mari.
Tierney non-stop.
Tierney will play for anybody. You could put my mum as Arsenal manager and she
there's a
Kieran
big
Tierney post. Will play.
Yeah, I agree, but there's a big connection there. They talk highly.
Xhaka and Elneny, he's turned Xhaka around. Xhaka should have been gone. I still debatably want him gone in January, because I'm like, one brilliant free kick and six passes into the final third don't make you amazing for me, my friend. You know, you're still very shaky to me. But Elneny, he brought back off loan and believed in. Martinelli's coming back from an injury, so he's going to turn up. Smith Rowe, he's going to him right now. You give me something. Saka is another one. He'll play for whoever's the manager. He just plays because he's just another echelon level footballer. And Lacazette was on his last legs to an extent, and he was bereft of all. Can you remember, he didn't score away for nearly, was it 18 months or something?
Yeah. And he went to Wolves.
So, do you know what I mean? If he changes this for Brighton, I will be very, very angry, because I'm this is a brilliant formula. And I can see potentially he might, because they're very, apart from Lamptey at right back, they're very, very slow. And you saw him the other day. If you run at them, so it's like, you know what I mean? It could be the Pepe and the Aubameyang come in. Because
I mean, lack pace at the back.
Like, if you play behind the lines and through them, we're in, because they are lackluster in terms of defending the pace.
I mean, I don't think Luis comes back in now anyway. I personally don't think he'd replace Holding at this point in a back four, the way he's playing it anyway. I don't think the Willian one, obviously, when he comes back into the squad, is the one we're all going to be watching, because he's not really dropped him ever. I know he had the Everton game, but it was a midweek game, and he rotated a lot of players in that game, and it was a weekend game after a midweek game. But so it's just interesting, because it's such a different type of player on the left in Martinelli. And obviously you have Saka as an option there. And we're still wondering about, you know, where we play our captain, Aubameyang, or do we move him left or central? He's been probably more effective under Arteta on the left, in fairness. He's played a lot more there, in fairness. But it just throws up that question. Now, Martinelli is someone I think you could move away from that position as well. But like we said, I mean, if the standard is what he's setting, I mean, I don't want to talk about midweek, but we were absolutely woeful. But I mean, he stole the show for 45 minutes, even from City, to be honest. I mean, I was only watching the game for him, and I'm watching it going, yeah, okay, sometimes absence makes your heart, you know, makes you forget how good someone was a little bit. And I'm going, no, he really is. He's an incredible talent, right? I mean, and full credit to us. I think we got him for 6 million from the fourth division in Brazil. I mean, that's a genuine coup, right? That one. I mean, we've done some dodgy deals, but fair play. That is an absolute coup. So that, you know, if you've got to give the club credit, and it's great dilemma. This is a great thing to be talking about, though, because I mean, no Gabriel, no Partey, no Aubameyang, three players that on any given day most people would say, well, probably your first three, four names on the team sheet, and we're saying, you know, we've comfortably beaten Chelsea without those three players in the team, and two of them for sure, Gabriel and Partey, even based on that, walk straight back into the team. Aubameyang, we're just looking at it and looking. I've always said, if he's not prolific, what does he give us? That's always been my argument with Aubameyang. And the reason I supported him getting the contract was he's always been prolific. Like, he's literally, I don't think he'd ever gone more than three games without scoring a goal for Arsenal until this season, so in a row. So it was, you know, there was no reason to think otherwise. But then when you see it without it, you start to think, well, what are we doing? But just touching on the second goal. No, I went to Neil for the first one as well, but I'll go to Neil as well, but get James' thoughts on it. For the second goal, it was actually a great build-up again to win the free kick from Saka, Neil. And Xhaka, he has our best conversion rate out of anyone, I think. I want to say it might have been, Albino might have said it's in Arsenal's history. It's 3-20 for free kicks. I'll have to have a look at that again. But he definitely has the best conversion rate free kick-wise out of this whole team, which I didn't realise, but I guess it's because he doesn't take many and he puts away a fair few. Neil, it was a great free kick from Xhaka, and in fairness, it was a very, very good performance from him. My only frustration, Neil, is I don't really see the need in... I don't really understand. I get quite... not upset, but I just kind of feel a little bit sad about the... when I see the social media comments from him, because it's clearly just... he has no interest in uniting this relationship that he seemingly feels as broken between him and the club, not the club, but maybe the fans at the club. And what I always go back to is, you should never judge yourself against the worst case, right? So you know, if you've got abuse from 10s or 20, that is still wrong, but that doesn't represent the whole. I've refused to believe that represents the whole. But I also believe that every club has idiots like that, and I don't believe they're more or less at Arsenal. Obviously, Xhaka feels aggrieved by it, etc. He's right. Do your talking on the pitch. The only frustration I have there, Neil, is he's just backing himself into a corner, because the next bad performance, same thing's going to happen, you know. But let's talk about this performance. Great free kick, Neil, involved in both of the other goals. I mean, can't knock him. It was a really good performance from him, Neil.
Yeah, different person. I also am a little bit concerned that he could easily switch back into the bad Xhaka, call it good Xhaka and bad Xhaka at any moment, you know. And you are, as someone in the highlight of being a professional player, you're going to get people that are going to run you down. You know, of course it's going to happen. That's life. And I suppose he's got to try and maybe eradicate that out of him. I mean, he might be someone that wears his heart on his sleeve. It's difficult. You can't persecute a character for just the way they are naturally. And if he's like that, and even if it's one in a million bad, you know, tweets against him, it might affect him. But as a professional, you've got to try and just rise above that. And I don't know whether that's going to rear its ugly head up again, as you said, another bad performance, back to the same old again. I don't know. I think, James, you touched on it a bit earlier. I don't know whether I'm still not convinced. I was a turnaround. I did a U-turn on my statement that I want him out of the club. Do you remember when he threw his rattle out? And I turned that around and I admitted, I held up my hand and said, I got it wrong. Arteta has completely rejuvenated him in a good way. And I even went as far as saying maybe we should give him the captain's armband back. I even said that. But then again, we've seen a little bit of the negative come back out of him recently, especially when the team hasn't been doing so well. He's not been, I think, doing himself any favours on social media. With his comments, you know, it's almost like that. There is that crew of, you know, the Ozils and etc. And you know, they're almost like having little digs at the club all the time. Which I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I'm like, whether Ozil has been treated fairly or unfairly, just leave all of that out. Try and be a professional. Don't be a kid and be immature about things like this. But let's, you know, this is supposed to be a positive podcast. And yeah, I thought he was just a different person. I said it earlier. I don't know what else to add, but that free kick was exceptional. You know, if anyone else had taken it, if it had been, you know, one of the darlings that the media love of English football had taken that, you know, we'd be hearing about it all day long. Just because it was Xhaka, it might not have got the accolades that he deserved. But, it, you know, no goalkeeper in the world would stop that. That was brilliant. It was, it, you know, above the height of it was right. It dipped, it curled, it did everything he wanted it to do. You know, it was perfect. It was magic. And I think we were all shocked. I mean, I remember on the WhatsApp, you guys were a little bit ahead of me because I'm at my mum's, so I'm watching it on my iPad. And everyone was going, what? What? What the fuck? What? And I was like, what's happened? I thought, what's happened? And then I saw it. I thought, what? You know, it was just, it was a lovely surprise. And I was pleased for him. You know, I've said it before. I don't care who the player is. If you wear the badge, I will back you. If you play with your heart and you play with desire and you're giving your life for the team and the players around you, I will back you no matter who you are. If Willian starts playing like that, if God forbid he is picked for the next game, but he starts playing like that, I might even think, good on you, son. But maybe not. We'll see. But you know what I mean? I was pleased for the lad. And he was involved. He was involved in all three goals as well. He was in the goal we touched on, the opening goal. That was a terrific pass. And I think even the third goal, he was interchanging and he was involved in that.
It was the ball from Holding.
Exactly, and Rob Holding, and you know, and I think it was Emma Smith-Rowe that provided the final assist. But Xhaka was integral to that move. That's what we want to see from him. You know, if Partey does walk back into the team, and you know, I wouldn't be averse to someone like Partey and Xhaka partnering. And I, you know, I'm not averse to that. So
I think the bigger thing here is, Neil, obviously we've seen Xhaka for 4 years. So when he comes out with a comment like that, it's slightly contradictory, because I don't know if that's the right word, but or irony. I think it's more irony because we know better. So when you say actions, but we're like, well, evidence suggests that's not true, Granite, because you reek of inconsistency the whole of your Arsenal career. So if you want to go down that route, that's fine. But you're going to get pelters for your next three or four games that you do what you usually do.
This is it, Jack. You've summed it up. It's the consistency. If you want to go on Instagram, because I don't believe he has a Twitter account. If you want to go on Instagram and you want to, you know, like flex like you're Ibrahimovic, like I said, because you hit a banger of a free kick and you made six final third passes, which that in itself is a shock for him to be actually playing for. That's another thing those young players did. They made Granit Xhaka pass the ball forward.
And faster.
Exactly. You noticed that. It was a massive... I mean, it was Elneny that I thought had the worst game. And it's not normal that you go, well, Elneny had the stinker and Xhaka had the...
Yeah, gave the ball away a couple of bad times,
exactly.
Really. Yeah.
Exactly. And he had that... He rifled one against the bar, which was unlucky.
But if
Granit Xhaka is still in the team for these next games that are coming up, which are going to be tough, and I mean West Brom, you know what Allardyce is going to do? He's going to go get it up him,
let him
have as much of the ball as possible, but get it up him, kick him, and we'll try and get something from a set piece or whatever later on. So he's got to be completely, you know, he can't be grabbing throats, can't be making stupid tackle. He's got to be as calm and disciplined. You know, you talk about how you're a leader, Granit Xhaka. Show it these next couple of games, because he probably will stay in the team. And I'm like, if you have five or six games where you play like you played against Chelsea, then all of us will go, again, there you go, fair enough, hands up. But you know that he might be an idiot. Yeah. And that's... Do you know what I mean? It's all about the consistency. You know, if you want to walk around like you are Ibrahimovic, then give me Ibrahimovic type consistency.
Exactly. And then what it really says is you know, it's a player that most likely doesn't see his long-term future at the club. No. And us fans are absolutely fine with that as well. And I don't want this to be the talking point of the podcast, because it was a very good performance from Granit Xhaka. But I think, you know, in the end, when you've got... I think the biggest thing with me is that brings out individuality, right? And that brings out the lack of accountability in games. Because if you're playing for yourself and not for the club and not for the team... And that's what I saw when I see comments like that.
If something like that,
you're going to have the inconsistency
window, Jack. Then so
yeah, I'm fine with it. There'll be takers for him.
Don't care anyway.
He's an international. There'll be takers for him. I'm not worried about selling a player like that, really. And we shouldn't feel reluctant to do so. But Neil.
And let's not forget. I don't think, I might be wrong, so correct me, guys, if I am. But I don't think he actually ever. Maybe he didn't feel that he needed to, but I never thought that he had properly apologised anyway for his behaviour time.
No, he never did.
He didn't. I think there is a touch of arrogance within his character, and it is more self-centred. It's not about I play for the team. You take the exact opposite of Xhaka, and it's his rhyming namesake, Xhaka. Xhaka plays for the team for me. He plays for the team, like you guys said. You can put him anywhere. He could be a ball boy and he would be just as happy.
Who's been poor as well, like Xhaka, but has every right to be a little bit more frustrated with the club than Xhaka, right? He was pulled out of the team for a player that had just come in and been signed when he was playing his best for us towards the end of the last season, goes and does something silly and is really like forthright and like very, very honestly regretful for what happened, and it seems very, very genuine, right? It doesn't take a lot. Right? I wouldn't say we're fickle, but it just doesn't take a lot. Do I care if someone apologises or not that I know for 4 years has let us down? No, not really. It's just the right thing to do as a professional, right? It's not about caring. I'm not sitting there going, oh, he's apologised, thank God I can sleep easy. I don't care. The point is what standards are being set, and it goes back to the whole non-negotiable thing and accountability, right? But he came back into the team and it was the right decision, well done by Arteta to bring him back in. He did really well, and I hope he continues to do that in the next games. But I think we've all sort of been here before to know what might happen, you know as weeks go by down the line, right? But James, third goal, simple question, did he mean it?
Yeah, that's goal of the season. I'm not even being biased because I would have said, if what is the goal of the season before that, I'd have said Sun against us. I'd have gone, it's sun against us all day, every day. But that is goal of the season. If it is Messi, then everyone stands up and claps and they talk about it for ages. That is sublime.
Well, no one's near it, in fairness. It's not like there's three or four people going in. There's anyone in the box. It's just on the edge.
People said it's a mishit cross. He's accurate with his crosses. He would not hit a cross that bad. He saw him off his line.
Even on his weaker foot?
No, I've said it before that the guy has the brass. You know, all I used to talk about how I wanted, especially on this podcast, I wanted our players to show bollocks. This guy at 19 years old has the bollocks to go, I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to dink you. And it's sensational. Look at Abraham afterwards. You did me. He was rattled, Abraham, after the game when Saka was going. Did you see that?
Yeah, I like that.
And do you know? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, that'll teach Abraham for doing the whole London is red thing last year.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'll teach her something.
No,
you're anonymous.
It's class. It is absolute class. I mean, I think he won all of his take-ons. I think he had six or seven crosses.
What do you think about my point? Sorry to interrupt you, but what do you think about the point for the right wing berth? Well, it's a real problem, right? The right side is a real problem for Arsenal Club.
Yeah.
Surely, he's a possibility for a solution there. Like, I mean, game in, game out, right?
Yeah. Neil said it earlier. Said it best. Merit. If you're in there and you're performing, you don't get dropped. Like for that Brighton game, I know you will touch on it later. Same 11 for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change any of them.
Not unless there's a fatigue or injury or something that.
Unless more of them get ill because.
Yeah. I mean, I'd slightly consider, I wasn't so blown away, but although I thought he got forward well, like he always does, by Bellerin's performance. So I'd slightly consider the Niles Bellerin. I don't know how quick their left winger is. I know Lamptey's really quick on the right, but I don't know how quick their left side is. But other than that, I wouldn't. Certainly the front four, I wouldn't even consider changing if they're fit and healthy. So yeah, I completely agree with you there. I actually do agree. I keep watching it over and over again. I think he probably did mean to do it. He seemed very, very confident in the way he kicked the ball and the way he ran off with it. It didn't look shocked or surprised to me, but maybe that's the way you react anyway. But you know, they said it about Ronaldinho, didn't they? They said it about other players, and Bergkamp's one at Newcastle. They said it was a fluke for a while, didn't they? This is obviously a little bit different, but great move from the back. I thought it was incisive ball.
That was Ali McCoist, wasn't it? Because I remember everyone else in that studio turned to him and was just like, mate, you're a dick.
How can you say it with Ronaldinho? I mean, Ronaldinho is literally the most talented footballer I've ever seen on a pitch. So I don't know how you can say it. But I mean, he could do absolutely anything. He could hit the ball against a corner flag and it can make a cross and you go, he meant that.
I remember Ian Wright turning to him going like, Dennis Bergkamp did that in training on a daily. And like that, he went, that is not a fluke. And if you look at the one that he scored against Argentina in 98 in the World Cup, it's the similar sort of thing. He goes, that one, like at Leicester, weren't it? That foot, then the
takes
other.
Takes over bang. His head, yeah.
Yeah, it,
yeah.
I'm like, that's no fluke. That's no. And this wasn't a fluke.
Yeah, and we talk about inverted wingers as well, just to touch on it. I mean, Saka is, Pepe provides us that as well, but Saka just, he provides so much more. Again, it's energy, it's liveliness, it's never hiding. It's always providing that pressing from the front, which we were so pressed for from the front. And I think Saka and Martinelli were such big triggers for that. I mean, you saw in the second half, Martinelli just chasing a ball all the way back to the goalkeeper.
I don't have his recovery stats either, but I think from his time when he was at left wing back, he's really good there because he protects Bellerin, and that's something that Pepe doesn't do. That's the other thing that makes him really good there. And
Willian doesn't do either, by the way. Yeah.
No, exactly. So on that side, if it's going to be Bellerin instead of Niles, because I don't think Niles can play in a four. In a five at right wing back, he can, but in a four, I don't think he's very good. So if Bellerin needs to be protected, then Saka is a much better option than the other two. You know, we still haven't seen Nelson, which worries me a bit. You know,
I think he's going to be loaned in January. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Reece Nelson fan. People know this.
Or sold, I don't know.
Yeah, but I would like to see a bit more of him before we do either cast him out either on loan or sell him. I would like to see him get more of a chance, because when he played against Liverpool, I even threw my hands up and went, no, that was in the league last year. I thought that was a bloody brilliant performance from him. I thought he was sensational in that game. Yeah. So it's tough, but yeah, Neil's word on merit. It's all merit for me. If we've had dross since October from so many of these established international type footballers. And you know what? These young players have probably looked at it and gone, all I've got to do is show some heart and play my game because I'm better than them because they're half-arsing it. And, you know, if he changes it, I mean, it was curtains. You know, I think if fans are in there, like you said at the very start, he wouldn't have had this game. I think he'd have been sacked after. But even though there was 2,000 or so in for Burnley, if it was full capacity, I think he'd have been long gone. And if he reverts back to type and plays the fate, you know, these
well, the question comes up there.
Yeah.
The question comes up there. In the year that we've watched him, I don't really feel he's been great at progressing youngsters into the first team.
No.
Saka was already there, and he was clearly one of our best first team players, really, when he arrived. So even though he is a youngster, it wasn't him that brought him through, right? He played Willock a little bit, but I don't think that was really to any great effect. A lot of it was from the bench. Recalled Eddie Nketiah from Leeds, which touched on the Balogun thing, which I don't really want to get into too much today. But if Balogun doesn't sign his contract, that's obviously partly the club's fault. But I really do partly put that on Mikel Arteta as well, because he had the option there. All he had to do was look into the under 23 side to see what he had to his ability. But he decided that it was a must that Eddie Nketiah was already gone. He was basically being loaned to, I think it was Sheffield Wednesday or someone because it wasn't working out. Bristol City, sorry, because it wasn't working out at Leeds. And he stopped the whole thing. You know, my argument is not that Balogun is definitely better than Eddie Nketiah. It's that at the very least, I think we would have seen something similar from him. And what you would have got is a player that signed a contract because he knew he was getting first team minutes. He would have signed it. And that's my issue. So if he turns out to be a Gnabry, a Rene Adelaide sort of type situation again, I would put a lot of it on the manager. So I don't think he's really handled youngsters very well. So my argument there is I think a lot of these changes were probably more false than given or decided. And Tuesday is going to be a real big test for him. Hopefully it's that awakening moment. Hopefully he's had that light switched on moment and he's gone, okay, clearly that's better than what I've been getting. So I need to stick with that now and at least give them the Brighton game. And if they're really poor in the Brighton game, then bring Aubameyang on with 30 minutes to go and make the changes that you need to do and say. But at the same time, I wouldn't, if you're going to give 3 months to Willian of dross, you know, you have to expect a little inconsistency from young players as well. So that my issue comes up there. I don't think it's necessarily the next game, because I think he's almost forced to play the same team. It's when they have a bad performance that does he just drop them out and not put them in squads again.
The answer to that as well is, Jack, is if you play someone like Saka, Martinelli or whoever, and they make a mistake, us as fans will go, well, it doesn't matter. He's young and he'll learn from it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the same with the silly.
Yeah, Willian's 32. You know what? He doesn't care.
It's the same with the desire to see, want to see Saliba in midweek, because we don't care about the League Cup, but you play Mustafi and Kalashnik. See, this is the thing. This is why I think it's more forced, because in midweek, like you know the club very well. We don't care about the League Cup. The League Cup is literally should be used to see players that might be able to hit into the first team that you've not been using. You already know Mustafi and Kalashnik. We already know how bad they are. We already know we'd love to get rid of them. Why do we need to see them? What? Because you're desperate to somehow scrape a win in the League Cup against City. We don't care. What we want to see is what can improve our first team. And he didn't do it there. And that's my issue. I go back to, like, if he's not doing it there, it were these changes more forced, right? So, but hopefully it is in a lightning moment and maybe it changes his thought process a little bit. But I still have question marks, and Lepers don't usually change their spots. So I'm not sure he's a coach that really is that interested in pushing youngsters through into the first team and going young for a first team.
City never really did it, did they, when he was
there? No, they didn't.
Foden's only just started
4 years, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, once Silva went, then he came in, but it was a long, slow progression, right? Mourinho doesn't do it.
Well, that's the thing is, with people like Guardiola and Mourinho and stuff like that, I can buy the established. I'm banking.
Yes, but we're different. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they are checkbook managers. So it's just like, well, I don't need to play my youngsters because if so-and-so doesn't do well in the January or the summer, I'll just go buy another one.
Yeah,
you know, Arsenal. Yeah, we don't do that. You know that. What's the banner? You know, well, we create stars. We don't buy stars. Whatever it is that was on the banner.
Yeah, and whether it was so, we loved watching the League Cup, and he never won it. But the reason we loved watching the League Cup because we always were wondering, who are we going to see? Who are we going to see that might be the
Carlos
next?
Carlos Vela, man. I used to think he was going to be.
Who's going to be
the king of everything?
Yeah, he was, who's going to be the next Cesc Fabregas? Who's going to be the next Wilshere? Who are we going to see this year? And we used to go to pre-season and be like, I wonder who's going to be the standout kid this year that's going to come. Do you know? And I've not yet got the hint yet that Arteta is going anywhere near that, and he needs to be, right? Look at Chelsea, they're 4 points lower than what they were last season. They spent 250 million. They paid their kids because they were forced to last year, right? We're not that club. We actually need to use youngsters, right? Because we don't have that kind of spending power, right? Our owners don't back us like that. So we need to use our youngsters. And if you get more than one that comes through into the first team, you know, in the same period, it's been so Saka's already shown that this group is a success, right? He's already shown it. He is the one that has led the way. It's showing that this particular era is a success. If you get a Smith Rowe along with that, and then fantastic, you know, you I mean, that's amazing to get two that come through and really improve the first team. But after the goal, just quickly touching, obviously we sat back a little bit more, but we still probably should have gone 4-0 up. And then he hit in the bar. I think we had one or two other chances. Martinelli overhead kick and another one from Martinelli where it was a bit like the West Ham one, wasn't it, last season? Ball coming across from the left and he hit it into the goalkeeper. Probably should have done a little bit better, but we should have been 4 or 5 up. And then they had their goal, which was probably probably onside, yeah, because of Bellerin's foot. It was touch and go. And then the penalty, great save, Neil. I mean, I've given Leno some pelters this season about, you know, not being Emi Martinez, but fair play. I mean, that was a really good save. And when he was called upon, he did really well, Neil. And I really like Leno's recent comments of, you know, even though I've questioned Mikel Arteta myself of just being very supportive and blaming the players, not the manager.
Absolutely. I thought he had a good game, to be fair. I think you talked about the outfield players being inspired maybe by the youngsters' exuberance and they had to up their level. I thought Leno had a better game. I think he was more commanding in the box. I know Chelsea didn't create much, but when they did have the odd moments, he was there. He was very authoritative in the box. And I think overall, you know, that the penalty save epitomised his performance as well. He's one that's uses, I think, social media in a better way anyway than some of the other players in our squad and in our team. I thought it was a great save. I thought it was what we've been crying out for since the days of Cech. Cech, you know, he always used to complain. You know, he did wonders for Chelsea. He comes to Arsenal, he can't even save a bloody penalty, not even one. And that kind of carried over a little bit. I've been saying the same. I'm not going to not hide from the fact that I still think he made a huge error in not keeping Emi. I don't want to carry on about it. I think we can you know, really make it stale conversation like we have done in the past, maybe with Ozil. So we don't want to dwell on it too much. It's done. It's water under the bridge. We've just got to get on with it. And I've always wished Emi all the best because I still like him as a player and as a person. I wish him all the best as long as it's not against us. But we've got Leno. He is our number one. And he proved it against Chelsea for me. So he had pretty much an almost faultless performance. And that's what we want. And I think this is where I do feel... So what if it's more than one youngster playing, Jack? So what? So what's the big deal? Even if it's seven youngsters who get into playing for the Premiership, if they all play well, so what? You know, we could. I don't think it's been done since the 1992 school of Man U, has it? That, you know, he completely brought a whole fielded a whole team of youngsters and they've gone on to do amazing things. Why can't it happen again? Why can't it be Arsenal? If we've got the talent coming through, play them. I don't see why we have to mothball them, or we have to, sorry, wrap them, not mothball them, why we have to wrap them up in cotton wool and protect them. No, you don't protect them. You know, kids of these days are bloody so strong.
I mean, I don't want to back, because he did really well with this game, Arteta, when he got everything right. But the sleeper one is again another youngster moment, red flag moment that flies up in me, because there is just no excuse for that situation. There might be an excuse for not playing him in the first team in the Premier League, but for removing him from all squads in Europa League, quite possibly. But he's going to loan him. I mean, he's almost a given that he's going to loan him now. Let's see if he holds him and he keeps him. Maybe
if he doesn't play that FA Cup game versus Newcastle, then yeah, he's going. He's on. He's going on loan somewhere.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate. But
sorry, Joe. I think our player management is so still atrocious.
Yeah, it really, really is. Bad. It's inconsistent.
It really is. I don't know what to say. But no. Going back to Leno, great performance, and may it carry on. And I like you both said, you're going to ask about predictions, but don't change any of the starting 11 for me. Yeah, Niles maybe. I think two key things about that game. For me, I saw two great partnerships. I know you sort of wasn't entirely convinced with Bellerin, Jack, but I thought Bellerin and Saka were a good partnership, and I thought Martinelli and Tierney. We've seen Martinelli and Tierney in the past. Before that injury to Martinelli, him and Tierney were smashing it on the left, absolutely smashing it. And I even used to say, Martinelli, as good as he is on the left, I think he can also play central. I think he can.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's that good. And you know, you were saying, how do we, I just want to say one thing about what I was saying earlier about Aubameyang. Sorry, I have to digress, but I just need to say this. I know I was giving Aubameyang a hard time, and I agree with you, Jack. He does have to be reintegrated into the team. Of course he does. He's Aubameyang. He's got to be. However, if the one possible solution, you guys might not agree, is play him on the left and don't drop Martinelli, push Martinelli into the middle.
I think that's.
I know that was sacrificed.
I think that should be the secondary option. I know with Eddie and Kerr, etc. But I genuinely do, because I think that should be the secondary option to Lacazette. I mean, Lacazette only gives us 60, 70 minutes usually anyway. But I think you just get something so different from Martinelli, and I actually think he just generates more chances on his own movement, and I think it should be, personally, I would go Lacazette, obviously. Balogun's pretty much gone, I think. So I'd go Laka and Martinelli as central as well. You still hear me? We're good. We're good. So
I'll go back to right at the start of that.
But I was agreeing with Neil's point.
Do the podcast again.
I was agreeing with Neil's point of Martinelli being at least, the very least, a backup for Lacazette centrally. I just think the quality doesn't drop, and I think that's really, really important. But and you're right, Neil. Leno is definitely the number one, especially after seeing old biscuit hands in midweek. Bloody hell! I tell you what. I mean, he's. I'll give Runnison a little bit of a break, but he didn't look good, did he? And I think that's another thing on the Emi Martinez, that effectively Runnison is the replacement for Emi Martinez.
Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it?
That's where you look at it and say, was that really the best sale? And I don't believe for a second that was the only possible sale. We knew there was money in for Niles and other.
Why not pay Macy? Give Macy a bloody run.
Yeah, I don't. Well, this keeper was a backup goalkeeper for Dijon, who were literally the bottom placed team in League 2. No, they were in League 2. They weren't in League 1. I think maybe they went up to League 1 and they were loaded, but and he got dropped really early for them. So we basically went to France, went, who's the worst goalkeeper here? Oh, it's him, he'll do, right? And he somehow had some sort of link with our goalkeeping coach. But and then there's been an argument also that he deactivated his account after abuse. He didn't deactivate it after abuse. He deactivated because he was abusing Arsene Wenger about 5 years ago on Twitter, and the player deactivated it because those tweets came back when he joined Arsenal. He was calling Wenger all sorts of things. So I'm not too fond of him, put it that way, at this point. But he just looks so small in the goal, doesn't he? He just looks like Hector Bellerin in goal. He's very small in goal. But
he's 25. I didn't know that. I thought he was about 16. He's 25, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what we've done there. No wonder we were still looking at that Raya from Brentford. Clearly, we just wanted this guy to come. I don't know what we wanted him for, but I'll give him time. Maybe he'll improve, you know. I'll give him time. But should we do some fan question before I cut off again? James, Melvin Mark says, it's taken Arteta by hook or by crook a long time to change a losing formula. His immediate team should be challenging him when things aren't running smoothly. Is he surrounded by yes men or does he not listen to them? Either way, are they fit for purpose? What do you think of his coaching staff?
He's surrounded by bloody morons. I've said this for weeks. But they're all losers. None of them have ever won anything or done anything. They're all a bunch of, they're not even yes men. They're just completely useless. I mean
there you go, Melvin.
I can't remember if I've told the story on the podcast or if I only told it.
You mentioned the story about Steve Round and his previous.
Yeah, Steve Round and David Moyes, after Man United had just won the league, went to Vidic and to Rio Ferdinand with videos of Sylvain Distan and Jagai Elka, and I think Everton finished 8th or 9th that season after Man United just won the league, and he told Vidic and Rio, I want you to play like this. And Rio and Vidic slammed the door and walked straight back out again and went, Rio was like, well, you're going to leave soon anyway, and he went, yes, I am, and Rio left not shortly long after.
Wow.
I mean, like I said before, he was chewing on his zip the other week when he turned to him to ask for help, and then he had his headphones in against Everton or whatever, listening to the bloody new Shaky Stevens album or whoever it was. Do you know what I mean? They're not even, you know, I love Melvin to bits, not just because of, you know, he asks good questions and everything. He always interacts with us. He's very good on the podcasts and the videos that he does. And, yeah, Melvin, it's not, they're not even yes men. They're just completely useless.
He's employed them, James, right? So Mikel Arteta has employed this group of staff. And what does it say about him that he's employed people? Because I think everyone looked at it, and I don't know as much as you do about this backroom stuff.
He couldn't get who he wanted. He wanted Xabi Alonso. And Xabi Alonso went, no, I'm at Sociedad and I'm not leaving.
And he also wanted Santi Cazorla, apparently.
I believe
as well.
So, yeah. Yeah, and Santi decided to play for another year at, is it Al Assad in Qatar?
Yeah, Qatar. He's getting money.
Yeah, under Xabi. He plays Xabi as his manager there. And
big time.
But, so obviously he didn't get who he really wanted. And he looked out there and he was probably like, well, you know, I know Steve Round from when I was at Everton. Again, it's, you know, who do I know? And there's a few that are coming in. You know, we've got the two new physios coming in. You know, you've got that Brazilian, you know.
When's he arrive? Is it January?
January 1st. He's already here, but they start January 1st, apparently.
He's a beast, isn't he?
Yeah.
Hopefully, I would just make his focus for the first month better his diet, wouldn't you?
Yeah, get him on weight program.
Yeah, I don't want anyone else in here. This guy is underweight. Let's focus on you. Stop eating lettuce wraps.
Jiu-jitsu that you're on.
Yeah, exactly.
But so he didn't get who he wanted, and he looked at who he knew and everything. And yeah, they're not good at all. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll change and progress them once he can. You never know. There might be a time where they go, yeah, I will come up. But I believe he needs more help than what he gets. And that even is in terms of his technical director as well. Like, I'm looking at Edu and I'm like, you need a big January as well, mate, because you're lucky. You're even lucky to be where you are as well.
Yeah. And the Willian Cedric thing really tarnishes Edu at the moment for me, you know. And you know, the party and Gabriel things are good marks, but I can't help but look at the Cedric, and which he was involved with to a certain degree, and the fact that he's so closely related to this agent, this Kier agent, that we're you know, these
it's these next two windows, mate.
Yeah,
because this window is basically the window to keep us in the league, and then the one after. It's like you said it before, and it's brilliant. That is the biggest chance in years to tear it up. And if like I said, if Arteta's still in there, this is completely how your Arsenal in your image now, because you've got most of the bad eggs going to be gone. Most of the ones that are on the big money are going to be gone. I mean, you spoke about Balogun earlier. I think his agent has played this magnificently by demanding $100,000 a week.
They've got the same agent, haven't they? Saka's, Eddie and Balogun have the same agent, don't they?
People go, that is ridiculous. How could they? 100% agree with him. You know, he went, you got people in that club that you don't play that are 90 grand or 110, 120 yeah. grand.
And it wouldn't have been the case if he'd given him the game time from this point last year.
Yeah.
I don't believe that would have been the case. I think no, it would just sign.
If you're going to stifle his development and not play him, then yeah. he needs to be paid top back.
I'd walk away if I was Balogun. Yeah. He knows he's walking, whether it's Liverpool or going abroad, he's walking because we've wasted a year with him, right? Someone said to me, well, you know, when Arteta came in, Balogun wasn't even featuring for the under-23s. He scored 10 in 15 when Arteta arrived. I was like, he was featuring. I was like, he was playing young boys football when he should have been least around the first team squad, right? And I think it's going to be another one we regret. I don't know how good he is because I've not watched him enough, but I know he's got something. Like, you can tell he's got something. But yeah, that answers Melvin's question very well. Well done, James. at Bob Lex, and I agree with you. I think I'm surprised he doesn't have maybe more senior men or more players, basic people around him that have achieved more because he's a new young manager coming in. I thought I would have seen that. I'm not specific on who, but I think I would have seen that. Is ML Smith Rowe the answer to our number 10 position? At Bob Lex says, clearly Arteta wants his midfield to either press or stay deep, seems to give us much more pace when playing. Neil, I know it's just one game, but do you think he's I think he's the best answer currently, but he needs support, doesn't he, Neil?
He's definitely the best answer currently. I'll back him all the way, all day long. Don't care if I don't know nothing about football. I see that player on the pitch and I think he's amazing. So, yes. For me, he's the answer. Yeah, maybe not long term. Maybe it depends on what happens in January, Jack, or maybe even in the summer in terms of everyone's been crying out for an established AM, not someone who's a little bit unknown and uncertain of. And there's a possibility we might get that player, and then that obviously stifle Emil Smith Rowe again. But from what I saw against Chelsea, why just carry on playing him? Just keep him there. He's adding more than just his gift of the game. I think he's influencing other players to play better.
Yeah.
Because they're going to
carry on.
Yeah. So, for me, if it answers the question, I personally, you guys might disagree. I personally think at the moment, he's certainly the answer.
Yeah. I agree. I agree entirely. I think we will sign an attacking midfielder in January. I think there's too many rumours around too many players that I think we will sign someone, whether it's the one we want or not, but or someone we want. But I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think if we do sign someone, we should be shipping out a few, right? So we should be leaving, certainly not reintegrating Ozil at that point because, you know, it's not fair on Smith Rowe. Hopefully, we're pushing Willian more away from the squad unless he's doing something on the wings, which I don't believe he will
Jack,
do.
Jack, I want more to go than more than
yeah. I want five out. But the thing is, James, the ones we want out are quite unrealistic in January, in fairness, because they would have gone in the summer, right? So if I ask you, your list is going to include Kalashnik, Socrates, Ozil, right? Those ones, other than maybe I think Greece are in the Euro, so maybe Socrates tries to get a move to play a bit so he makes sure he's in the squad, maybe. I'm not sure he will, to be honest. Greece probably ain't got, he probably made the squad anyway. So those players aren't going to go. So this is where I always go back to sell or loan people that were, you know, are actually desired, and I go back to it. As much as I love seeing the youngsters, I think there's youngsters in this team that have had 40 to 50 games already for the first team. If you're not sure about them yet, then I would loan them out, right? At least for 6 months, just loan them out, see what they do.
Willock for me.
Yeah, Willock for me. I mean, Eddie's another one for me. Nelson would be another one for me. Even though I like Nelson, he's not getting a game time. So those would be the three for me. And loan them 6 months to a Premier League club so they can't play against us. And if they do happen to be better than we think, we go, yeah, they're going to annoy some of the other teams, right? So, just be intelligent about it. Chelsea do this all the time. And there's no question in my mind that people know that Willock, Nelson and Eddie are on loan, that teams aren't going to come looking. You think Sheffield United and Fulham and these, they would come looking for those players. So I think, James, if you're including those types of players into your four or five out, I'd agree with you entirely. But I think we do need to sell one, and that would be the argument. Who is sellable, right? You talked about Xhaka earlier. I think probably we have to look at the right back position again, to be honest, and say we've got three here.
is there any point in us? If you don't believe Niles can play in a four, which I probably agree with you, maybe that I don't want to lose Niles, but that maybe that's, you know, we have to sell
Niles' future's in the middle.
Niles' yeah, futures. But I'm not sure.
Once Partey comes back, I would play them too.
Yeah, but I don't think he will.
No,
I don't think he will. No. But again, like Chambers, but someone like Saliba obviously is expected to go out on loan. But Chambers, is he going to play? Is he really going to play in the next 6 months? I don't think he is. So, I mean, you never know with injuries, etc. But then loan him, right? Loan or whatever you need to do. I'd like to get five out before we get the one in, because I don't think it does us any favours to have 30 people in the squad when six or seven of them know they're not playing, right? Because it just decreases the level of competition.
Jack, how many are you wanting to buy?
I only want one.
Really?
In January. I mean, I want more. I want more. But the reason I only want one is I don't believe we'll ship out enough to get the two, right? I personally would want a midfielder.
I think you need to buy a goalkeeper now.
And, oh, yeah,
I'm like, you need to buy another one after midweek.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
You have to buy another keeper.
Because
if Leno goes down again,
yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if we can find a seasoned veteran that, you know, is happy to be a number two, but you know they're safe.
Try and chuck the money at that Pope at Burnley, because he'll come if you offer him the money.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to put money into a goalkeeper.
No, neither do I.
You know, if there's a senior veteran like a Shea Given was, or even like, I don't like Tottenham, but like a Joe Hart, do you know what I mean? Like someone like that, that's been there, done it, you know they're safe at least. I would probably go that route. And I actually agree with you. I forgot about that. I agree with you on that one. But Neil, good answer to that one. And James, should we keep or sell Rob Holding? He gets a lot of stick bunched in with Mustafi and Luis. Who was that to? Yeah, Neil. No, is it Neil? Go on, Neil. I think I gave Neil the last one. Oh, it was James. James, go ahead. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, keep him. Yeah, keep him at the moment.
He starts every game, right? So.
Yeah, and he had a really good game the other day. I think people lambast him because of, you know, he doesn't engage as much as maybe he should. And also they criticise him because he can't play out from the back. But I thought he was brilliant the other day.
Another one. Better way to adjust the question then is, would you give him a new contract?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. If we're not going to go out and buy somebody who's right-footed and is of a level of maybe a Gabriel or whoever, then you have to, out of all the other ones that are at the club, and we have got a ton of centre backs, he's one of the only other ones that are better. I mean, unless Mav Rapinos all of a sudden comes back from Stuttgart next season,
and he starts playing
a blinder, or Saliba comes back in straight away and starts playing a blinder. And yeah, holding your man.
Yeah, we got to remember that Mustafi, Luis, and Socrates aren't going to be us. There's three centre backs off the books in 6 months already.
Hopefully they won't be. Yeah.
Well, in 6 months, I mean, they're all out of contract in 6 months.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. Luis only got the 1 year, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so that's something. Two. That's right. No, it was one and then a one. So this is his last year. But I agree with holding. I think the only thing I'd say, Willie, there. So that's Willie asking that at the Warm Boom Top Man. Is that I wouldn't want him to be necessarily a must start player if we were actually progressing back to trying to get to the top four. But I definitely want him to be one of the four. I think he's definitely. You look at
just save him for Chelsea. Players going well against him in the FA Cup final.
That's what he did in this game as well. He played his big game players, right? We know Holding's a big game player. We know Lacazette's big game players, right? They love a big game. They just love a big game. And even back in the day, do you remember 2004? I was reminiscing a little bit. The big game players weren't always the ones that you thought of, right? They weren't always your Henrys and your Bergkamps. Big game players were like Lundberg, right? Always showed up. Ray Parler, not 2002, but always showed up. Wiltord always showed up in a big game. Like, you play him a big game and we'd be like, sometimes he'd drop Henri sometimes. I mean, like, or he, you know, or he wasn't fit or whatever. And you'd be fine with it because you were like, I guarantee Wiltord scores today. So he's just always had these big game players. It's not always the best players that are the ones that show up for a big occasion. But at Mims the Word, I don't think I've had a question from Mims the Word, so thank you. Simple question. It's a simple question. How does it feel? What a game for the kids. Yeah, it feels great, Mims the Word. It feels really great. Nick P, it wasn't really good, it was a comment, but thank you. Nick P81 says, who's this for? Is it just for Neil? Ozil, Willian, Laka, Hector, Luis, Cola, Xhaka, Papa, da, 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 that's over 80 million in wages. I've not done the math on that. Who would you like to bring into the club to do the squad building? Is Edu experienced enough? If Mikel Arteta leaves, who's the manager we bring in? Nick's looking for a change as possibly. Neil, I mean, where are you at with the manager, Neil? Because I said after this game, I said I'd still regard anything than less than seventh unless you got Europe for other means as failure this season. I don't see why my goalpost should have changed because we've had a terrible start. That's my opinion, right? So I just, because we've had a start where we're all fearing relegation and hopefully we settle that and that's no longer a fear, I don't see why at the end of the season we shouldn't evaluate it and believe that below seventh is still failure. And I think that's fair. Are you on the same boat there? And if you are, I know you don't look too much at directors and managers to replace.
No.
But is it fair to say, just to answer a little bit on Nick's question, is it fair to say we should be considering those two positions, Edu's and Mikel Arteta, if that does end up happening?
Certainly, we have to. For me, it's about the progression of our club, and if that means the expense of certain key personnel to progress, we have to consider these things. One game don't maketh the manager. Unfortunately, you know, as good as the game was against Chelsea, as good as Arteta's got it right, whether it was forced or otherwise, or it was just simply, yes, I'm dropping players there because they're not performing for me and giving others a chance. If that was the case, I'd prefer that to be the case, actually. But it still doesn't make it, you know, solve all the problems. You know, everyone was saying, oh, yeah, that's it now. We're all right now. We're not going to be relegated. Well, no, no. It's one game. So we're still only 15th or 16th or whatever it is. You know, we're still very close to the danger zone. And we still will be, even after January. You know, even the next two or three games, we're not going to, like, change anything drastically, although, you know, it will help. We have to take one game at a time and we have to not get complacent. Complacency is such a evil, especially in football. We have to make sure we build on that one great victory against Chelsea. And so it remains to be seen. So for me, the jury's still out for Arteta. If we're going to talk about Arteta firstly, we have to see how it goes over the next few games, because I think if he reverts back to the same old personnel again in the very next game, which could still happen, I know that all three of us want to see the same 11 against Chelsea, but it could happen. I'm not going to be happy. And I know for a fact, you both of you, especially you, James, before the Chelsea game, were saying he's got to go. So one game doesn't change that overnight. So I think the jury's still out. I'm not saying Arteta out by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not saying that because I don't know. I said it before in the last podcast. For me, it's a combination of things that are happening within the club. So not necessarily changing a manager is going to change everything. Maybe in the short term it will, but in the long term, I don't think it will. So I'm not suggesting that's the answer. All I'm saying is the jury's still out. So for me, it's in the next few games. With regard to Edu, no, I think James and yourself are probably more clued up on stuff like this, because I don't really look into these things too much. But he hasn't... I thought Arteta-Edu partnership was fantastic when it first materialised. Now I'm not so sure. I think he is inexperienced, unfortunately. But let's see.
The big question that comes up is you know, having too much inexperience across the board. So you have Mikel Arteta, first job, Edu in a, you know, new position ish even though they did something slightly similar at Corinthians, and then obviously Vinay, who's never really done the role he's done. And I think that's the argument can we go on like that? Do we need an experienced head? I don't think we can, no matter what happens with this season. I think we do need an experienced head in there, now whether it's someone that comes in above Edu and he deals with it or leaves or whatever. I'm not sure, but I do stick with the Arteta thing. I think you know, it's easy to look at this season and think it's gone away with us, and anything we get from it the way it stabilises is a bonus. But I still stand by that. I think below seventh, you have to unless we do something.
Jack, we are Arsenal Football Club. You've got to be right to feel that way.
Yeah,
we're not a club. We did not move to the Emirates to be fighting relegation. Okay, we moved to the Emirates to be challenging for things. So it's not good enough. Yes, of course, I with the way things were before the Chelsea game, I was praying for 17th because I just wanted to survive. But we shouldn't be looking that way. My God, we're looking at 6-pointer relegation fights. I don't recall that in my history of supporting the club. It's not good enough for me. We should be challenging, or we should at least be knocking on the challenging door, if you like, at least. Yeah. So, yes, I think that does come into question. And I think you're right about this inexperience throughout the board. If Arteta is the experienced one, then you need a good foil for him, an experienced foil for him, the way David Dean was an amazing foil for Wenger. So I think that does need to be reviewed, I think, personally.
Yeah, and Nick, just to put in a name that people have mentioned, I looked into Ralph Rangnick, who was the previous manager of Leipzig, would be someone that I looked at. He gets a lot out of a very little. Like, he's basically an Arsene Wenger, right? He increases funding dramatically from players that cost very, very little, and he regenerates money. And it's exactly the type of sort of director of football we would need at this sort of club that looks to be self-sustaining and things like that. So a good question. Jackie at AFC asked about how much a number 10 makes a difference for Lacazette, and we actually touched on that, Jack, so appreciate that. Let's do predictions. I agree. I think it's a tentative period for Arteta. I think we've got to be hopeful and optimistic that he can get 4 points out of the next two games. I think anything less than that, I'd be concerned with it. I don't think it's lightning and thunder here. I don't think they're going to necessarily make a change anyway, even if we just settle into mid-table mediocrity. I just get the feeling that then if they were going to make a change, it probably would have happened by now, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe not, you know. But I'm really hopeful that if he can get 4 out of the next 2. But again, if he'd gone with the youngsters from the start and he decided to go that way, all of this would have been a little bit more acceptable in a way, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of, he may not positionally, but if we were playing the right type of football and losing games, etc. But the fact you've stuck with the same senior heads and stuck with the same poor dross performances makes it harder to accept. So hopefully this is like we said, a turning of the lights moment. But Brighton, we play, I think it's tomorrow for you boys, it's Tuesday. And I think, I don't know what time the game is. Does anyone know what time the game is? Is it evening game? No one knows. We don't know. It's on Tuesday.
It's an earlier one. Yeah.
What time is it, James?
6 o'clock kickoff.
Oh, wow.
Is it? 6 o'clock.
On Amazon.
On Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, yeah, there you go. I don't know what channel it's on.
Over. Bezos special, so.
Yeah. There you go. James, predictions. Okay, the tough side, they should have beaten West Ham today or yesterday. I think, was they're a tough side. They've got some good players. I know they're not in a great position either, but they've got a good team. Predictions at Brighton, James, and first score.
Yeah, so you summed it up where you said 4 points. I actually think 4 points is what we're going to get, and I think we're going to win this one. And I'm going to go 2-1, and I'm going to say Lacazette.
2-1, Lacazette.
Yeah, but it could, 2-1 Arsenal win, Lacazette. But if you really wanted the first scorer, I've done the first Arsenal scorer, but it will be Danny Welbeck that will score the first goal, and then we'll pull it back.
Come back.
It's
going to
be tight. It's going to be a tough game. We'll ledge it. We'll nick it.
Yeah. Okay. Neil, what's your prediction?
So, I echo what James said, but I'll be a little bit more optimistic because I think we have to be. We've got no choice. So I'll go 2-0. 2-0. We'll manage to keep a clean sheet, which we almost did it against Chelsea. I think we'll keep a clean sheet. Welbeck will go close, but he won't do it. It'll be what he was at Arsenal a little bit, hopefully with the goal scoring at times. So 2-0, and I will go with Martinelli.
2-0 Martinelli. I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to go 1-0 win. I'm going to 1-0 win Saka, and I'm going to hope that we can sort of scrape out there with a clip. I agree. I think it's going to be a really tough game. I think they're quite a good footballing team.
I want to see Leno and Mopai. I want to know if they'll shake hands.
And I just don't let him get in your head and just play the game. Yeah. But I hope, like you boys, that we have a positive lineup and a lineup that really supports the last game and gives credit to those players to go out there and try and do something similar again.
Absolutely.
And let's see, because I was really excited to see him in that last game, and I enjoyed watching it. I mean, you sat there and you enjoyed watching the game, not just the result.
Yeah.
And it was different, you know. And I wasn't nervy or anything like that, really. In the last 5 minutes, a little bit, if they scored their penalty, of course I would have been. But generally, we were playing on the front foot, and we looked dangerous all throughout, didn't we?
It was just nice to win.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Because Christmas as well.
It was nice to watch.
Yeah.
You're generally happier anyway. But
yeah.
It's just... you know, it, like I said on WhatsApp, it was just nice to sit there and not be like, oh, this one's a wanker, this one's a wanker.
It's weird because from the first start of the game, the last 7 weeks, I'd sat there from the start and not moved. But even from the first 5 minutes, I was kind of up and standing, clapping a little bit and going, all right. You just saw the change from
seconds.
The start. And it set the tone, didn't it?
It's instantaneous.
More of the same, please.
If we can win Tuesday, it settles the, you know, the relegation sports. And it starts to make you think just a little bit about, you know, performances and what's your best lineup and little things like that. And you start thinking about the progression of the team again and not worrying about the absolutely unthinkable, because that is not something I want to be stressing about. So, but boys, hopefully we'll back after Brighton. Maybe Wednesday, Thursday, we'll come back and do a short one, maybe 34-minute pod, nice and short, review that one. And hopefully it's a win. Fingers crossed. Sorry about my internet today. We're on YouTube. You can find us typing Purely Arsenal. If you're looking for our podcast regular, just be on YouTube. Subscribe to it and it comes out first on there, and then it will be on all your usual podcast apps, good ones and bad ones. And then
thanks to all the people that interacted with questions. Always.
Yes, we appreciate your questions.
Love
and
you guys.
Your retweets and supports. We're small time.
Oh, amazing.
Always appreciate
amazing.
It. Yeah, really, really appreciate it. James, Neil, thanks so much. Up the
Thank
Arsenal.
You, mate.
Chat
come
to
on, come on, we're
boys.
Back.
Come on, we're back. Thanks, boys. Thank you.